Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
so he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another episode, an AFC Championship game episode of the Behind the Steel Curtain flagship podcast, The Standard is the Standard. I'm Jeff Hartman, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. With me, as always, my co-host Lance Williams out on the West Coast. Lance, how is it going Wednesday night, or I guess it's Wednesday evening for you out there?
Steeler fan. I'm cool, calm, and collected. I'm so cool and calm and collected, and I need to post a picture on Twitter, but you guys won't believe me. I wear a Fitbit band that monitors my steps, my activity, my heart rate. My heart rate was in the 70s when the Chiefs scored that touchdown and got the ball for the 2-point conversion. I knew they were going to win. I knew they were going to win. So I'm cool as a fan. Cool as a fan.
Well, you know, that's a really good segue into, we wanted to talk about, when we were chatting with each other and figuring out what we wanted to talk about for tonight's show, we wanted to touch on the Chiefs game. And for me, I am head first into New England, but at the same time, we do have to address the game that just happened. I guess it just happened on Sunday night. A lot of stuff happened, but we want to talk about the actual football game first. I wanted to get your opinion on a couple of things. We could always do the route of the game balls and this and press the, you know what, it's going to be the same old, same old. Le'Veon Bell rushed for 170. I thought Roethlisberger, we're going to talk about him in a second, I thought he did a lot better than people are giving him credit for, and I thought the defense stood tall when they had to, but there was one particular instance in this game that I wanted to get your opinion on, Lance, and that was Sean Davis's hit on Chris Conley, who it was a devastating hit. You watch that hit in real time, and I tell you what, it looks like Conley could be really, really hurt. And this is the second week in a row. Matt Moore obviously looked like he was dead on the field after Bud Dupree hit him the week prior in the wild card game at Heinz Field. Here's my question for you, Lance. I don't think that you're going to disagree with me that he did hit him in the head and that he hit a defenseless receiver. The penalty was warranted. I'm not arguing that. And he was fined over $24,000 today, and that's coming from him by the league for that hit. Here's my question. What is the NFL, in your opinion, expect him to do in that situation? If you watch the play, Conley turns to his right, but the football is coming over his left shoulder, so he has to swivel around quickly, and the ball is extending away from him, so he has to reach. He's kind of moving towards the ground. It really takes that strike zone that the NFL gives him and almost eliminates it. What is Sean Davis supposed to do in that situation, in your opinion?
Hit the guy in the head and pay a $24,000 fine. I mean, that's the only thing that he can do. I mean, that's the only thing that he can do because the play is going so fast. He had such a limited area to hit him at, and unless he targets the turf, he's either going to fly over the guy, hurt himself trying to hit him, or hit him in the hand and pay $24,000. And the surprising thing about that rule is, you know, that's a rule that comes out of the competition committee, and there are former players on the competition committee that were who talked to or consulted about who creating this rule, and they know that this is so hard. It's hard to do. The game is so fast. It's so bang-bang that, you know, guys are just going to either, in the case of that play, get hit in the head and pay a fine, or you're going to hit somebody in the torso like Mike Mitchell did, I believe, a receiver. I think it was Marvin Jones last year when he bit in the ass. Or guys are going to blow guys' knees out. And that's the only thing that you can do the way that it's written. Now, the ref called it to the letter of the rule. But, you know, the only thing that Sean Davis can do is hit the guy in the head, get a fine. Luckily for them, it was half the distance to the goal, and luckily for them that Sean Davis was able to keep his head and make a key critical play on a failed two-point conversion. But the only thing he can do is knock the guy out. You don't have enough time to think. You just knock the guy out. You just react and you just play football. It is what it is.
And that's the thing. And for me, and you know, I have a friend of mine who's a Dolphins fan, and he was texting me when Matt Moore was hit by Bud Dupree, saying how the Steelers are so easy to hate. It's the style of play that they have. And I'm like, look, football is a physical game, and people that play it, especially receivers, know that they can be going over the middle and get absolutely punished. And this is one of those situations where I looked at it and said, the only other thing that he could do other than, like you said, dive over top of him is he would have to let him just try to catch the football. And you can't do that because no matter where wherever he was in terms of on the field and the way he was turning, he would always be defenseless. But I think we both agree that he was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and he decided he was going to knock him out, essentially, which he looked like he knocked him out. But the Miami Dolphins neurological doctor or consultant must have been on the sidelines because guess how many plays Conley missed? One. Just like Matt Moore. These guys are getting rocked in the head, and they're missing one play. I'm sorry, I've been around concussion protocol for a long time as a coach myself, and no one in their right mind at the high school level, college, or professional level should see a hit that bad and be able to assess in one football play that they are able to get back into the game. I'm sorry, I just can't fathom how that happens. It's 2 weeks in a row. Lance, I don't know if you feel the same way I do, but if they're going to be serious about head injuries, that's way too fast for my liking. What do you think?
Think about it, Jeff. That just demonstrates the hypocritical nature of the National Football League when it comes to player safety. I mean, you have the commissioner talking about this greater risk falling off a couch than playing football. So that gives you the level of disrespect that he actually has to the physicality of the game. I'm a long-time migraine sufferer, and I've had several concussions in my life. And trust me, there is no way you can recover neurologically after a concussion in 10 minutes. Because I would riddle me this, Jeff. I bet it was about, you know, 10 minutes between the play that he missed and he came back in. There's no way, logistically, that they could get the examination and everything done, and you'd be given a clean bill of neurological health to come back and make a play. No way. So it's a farce. It's an absolute farce. So that guy, if he wasn't concussed, he should have never come back in the game after taking a hit like that. That should have been a wrap. You take a hit like that, you don't come back in. That's it. But they're not really concerned about player safety. It's lip service. We all know this. You know, these guys are gladiators out there. They're taking big shots. The NFL ultimately does not care.
Yeah, and so the only other topic I really wanted to run by you is I understand that you have not been really high on Roethlisberger, and I think we both agree that he needs to play at a, well, let's call it like people are saying, that a future Hall of Fame level. I thought that he didn't play a bad – I didn't think he played a bad game against Kansas City. His stat line might not have jumped out at you, and they had some big plays. Think about the play to Antonio Brown. The big stain on his, I guess you would call it his record or his stat line, is that they did not get the ball in the end zone while they were in the red zone or near the red zone in this game. assess Ben Roethlisberger's play, in your opinion, after Sunday night's game.
I think when you look at the way he's playing, particularly when you look at how Matt Ryan, Dak Prescott, trying to combine Zeke and Dak, and I'm saying Dak, excuse me, but it doesn't matter. They're out of it. And to your friend, the Miami Dolphins fan, if you're listening to the program, Jeff's friend, who's a Miami Dolphins fan, and we'll talk about this guy later, you're just mad that A.B. twerked on the Dolphins. You're just mad that A.B. boogied on the Dolphins, if you haven't seen that meme. But when you look at the performance of Prescott, Rodgers, and Ryan, you know, even Brady's performance was okay, not Brady-esque. Ben's playing average football, and I think it really paled itself in the red zone, where I believe he was 1 of 6. And I really had a problem with it. I was going to ask you this, and you can give me your thoughts after I finish. I didn't like the red zone plan. I believe they ran 11 plays, 9 pass plays, to 2 runs, I believe. And, you know, of course, the pick is counted in there. I believe he was 1 of 6. You know, maybe 1 of 6 or 1 of 7 in the red zone. That's not good enough. You know, that's not good enough. And that's not going to be good enough on Sunday against New England. And I don't care if somebody tipped it or whatever. You cannot turn the ball over in the red zone. You know, they've got to score a touchdown, play better. I think he's played okay. I think he's played well in the spot. I thought he was good in the first half against Miami. The throw on third down to A.B. in that tight window was a money throw. That's a $125 million throw. That's a call my number, I get it done, I make it happen, I make this throw and close the game. That's the type of throw I think people are looking at more consistently during the game. Because at some point in time, and it's probably going to occur on Sunday, he's going to have to ball out. And he just hasn't been balling out. He's been steady, but he hasn't been balling out. And they're going to need him to ball out like Le'Veon is balling out if they want to get this 7th championship.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I agree with you, and to answer your question about the red zone play calls, especially early in the game when it was really 3rd and short, they were not running the football, and that was extremely frustrating. When you have a running back that's averaging over 5 yards a carry, at the time I want to say he was averaging almost 8, and you're not imposing your will down there, it really kind of boggles my mind. And I've said it for a while. You go back to 2015 when the Steelers struggled in the red zone, they got way too pass happy when they were down in that area of the field. They need to stay balanced all the time, not just in between the 20s, but really in the red zone as well. Utilize Bell, run the plays that might be creative. The one thing I think that the Steelers should be able to take away from a team like Kansas City was in that first drive where they ran right down the field and scored a really easy touchdown, they used their skill players to create space for others. And whether that was someone like Antonio Brown, they've had Antonio Brown in the backfield before. Doing something like that that's not necessarily a gimmick, that's not necessarily a trick play, can cause a wrinkle in the defense and can create space for someone else. I think that the Steelers are so much better than what they showed in the red zone, and this is what Ben Roethlisberger said today in his media availability for the leading up to the AFC Championship game. He said he thinks it's just a blip on the radar based on the fact that during the regular season they were one of the best red zone offenses in the NFL, and so they'll have plenty of opportunities to do that, hopefully, against the Patriots. But like you said, you want to beat the Patriots, you're going to have to play good football. But here's where I think Roethlisberger might be struggling a little bit. I almost feel like in the playoffs and maybe even a little bit in the first half of that Baltimore game, maybe the third quarter of that Baltimore game when Roethlisberger threw those very key interceptions early in the third, he's not the same gunslinger that we're used to seeing. The guy that just steps back, sees it, steps, and rips it. We're seeing more of a tentative Ben that is being more cautious with the football. I'm okay with being cautious with the football, but you can't change the player that got you there, that's won 2 Super Bowls, that's been to 3 Super Bowls. You have to kind of let him go, and you have to let him play his style of play. And if you throw an interception, you hope it's just not the one that breaks your back. You know what I mean? So do you see that as well, that Roethlisberger seems to be playing a little bit cautious, maybe overly cautious these past few weeks?
I wouldn't say cautious. I don't know if he fully knows how to exist and get his while Le'Veon is getting his. With him not being the focus, like how to get his game going while somebody else is getting their game going, while being the complimentary guy. Because it's always been so much on Ben in this offense. And let me ask you this. Let me turn around and ask you this, Jeff. Tajay doesn't strike me run pass play caller. Like at times, he doesn't mix running pass really well, where it's not finessed out and it's really flowing really well together, where both are complementing one another. So, you know, I don't begrudge the 10-play running play drive that scores the touchdown. But, you know, when you're rolling it that way, you know, we've seen other teams be able to nuance the pass and the run and really mix those two together where they're really having teams off balance. You know, I don't know. He doesn't strike me. I don't get the impression that he's really adept at that in mixing the two together. Like, it still seems rough to me in patches. What's your thoughts?
Well, the first thing is the run-pass option plays takes that out of Todd Haley's hands to an extent. But also, if you watch these games, especially during this winning streak, he has been in the very early portions of the game, he's a setup coordinator. And what do I mean by that? Think back to Miami. They came out, they were throwing the ball early and often, and everyone was thinking, holy crap, this team can't stop the run. Why are they throwing the ball so often? And then what did he do in the second, when he comes out in the second drive? They run the ball nonstop right down their throat. Watch the Kansas City game. They come out, they're throwing early. The second drive, it wasn't as run-heavy as that Miami second drive, but it was very run-oriented. He's setting up the run by passing early on that first drive to get everyone to back off a little bit. He's a setup guy. That's kind of been his MO since he's been at Pittsburgh, when you think about it. The problem that he has, though, is that he's always looking to set something up, even from a play-to-play standpoint. You know, he'll run, and then when everyone's – I'm sitting there yelling against the Chiefs, my gosh, they're running it so often. Run play-action pass, it'll work, and he never did, which is very un-Todd Haley-like. He's a setup guy. That's just the way that he works. I think that it has been working because Le'Veon Bell has been getting really good production early in games. They're going to have a tough test against the Patriots' run defense this week, and whether they're going to be able to do that. I don't think he's going to be able to do the same recipe or equation that they've had in the first two games, where you open it up throwing, and then you turn to the running game afterwards after you've kind of softened up the defense with the pass. They're going to be good enough to not fall into that trap. They're going to be smart enough to not fall into that trap. They're going to have to run the ball and mix in the pass and vice versa early and often. But I agree with you. Todd Haley is not the best run pass, or as I call it, balance coordinator that I've seen. That doesn't mean that he's bad. That's just not his forte. It's not his strength. So that's just my take on that. I don't know what you think, but they're going to have to really be balanced against New England if they want to win.
I agree. In terms of the defensive side of football in Kansas City, you know, they adjusted well. I don't know what the adjustment was. I don't even know if there was an adjustment. And that's the beauty of football, because you saw the way Kansas City was well scripted out on that first drive. They found some stuff that would work. And it's great. Whatever adjustment, or if there even was an adjustment, the Steelers were able to handle a lot of the stuff that Kansas City did moving forward. Kansas City had some drops. Kelce had some drops. There were some plays. You know, I'll look at it on game film again that I thought Alex Smith missed with Tariq Hill. I don't know if that play that they showed on NBC during the game was legitimate. You really have to look at the game film to see what the progressions were for Alex Smith's read. But, you know, they hit. They were physical. James Harrison got pressure, but the three got pressure. They turned the ball over. They were really physical in the ball game. You know, if I were giving out a game ball, of course my game ball would go to James Harrison, but I'd also give a game ball to Sean Davis for that big breakup, and those were the two big plays in the game. But let me ask you, in terms of that last series, the hold, did you think it was a hold by Fisher? And what were your thoughts on Kelce's comments after the play?
Well, first and foremost, I don't understand how anyone now, Chiefs fans were invading BehindTheSteelCurtain.com and saying that wasn't a hold. There was even one fan that was so lonely in his life that he was going back in the game and he was taking still shots and sending them out to several different people on Twitter saying, you know, like a picture of a Marcus Gilbert hold that wasn't called. And it's like, come on, man, get a life. I mean, seriously. But for me, yes, that was a hold. I mean, he clotheslined and everyone said that Harrison was slipping. You know what? He's a veteran. He's 38 years old. He's been around the block. He knows how to buy these calls. That comes with the territory of being an edge pass rusher and someone that's been so good for so long. You know how to sell it. So maybe he didn't. It wasn't a ridiculous hold, but it was good enough, and he sold it enough that it got the flag. And I'm not going to complain about that. That's part of the game. As for Kelce's comments, man, I don't know what that guy's trying to do, but it almost seems like he's trying to lose endorsement deals. I don't know if he has endorsement deals, but if there's a book that needs to be written about here's how you lose yourself a lot of money, well, the first thing would be was go on a lame duck dating show trying to get girls to like you, which says a lot if you're a $1 million athlete. And the second would be is to cry and whine about the officiating and then say that the officials couldn't even work at an effing Foot Locker after you lost a really close game instead of standing up there and being the professional that you're supposed to be. I thought Travis Kelce's whole behavior, demeanor, et cetera, was very childish, and his demeanor on the field didn't help him either, whether it was the drop pass and he's throwing a little tantrum on the field to shoving Ross Cockrell, who, kudos to the Duke grad, he's smart enough to know what he's doing. He's going out there, he's antagonizing him, and then he shoves him. You get a little flop, you know, like the blocking call in basketball, 15 yards the other way. That's just my opinion. What was your take on the Fisher hold and crybaby Kelce's antics?
I agree with you 100%. First of all, offensive linemen can put their hands around a guy's neck. That's not a hold on its face. Which makes it a hold is if you yank on it and you cause a guy to lose his feet. That's what makes it a hold. You can get your arms that high. So for a lot of guys out there saying that that wasn't a hold, they probably don't know what a hold is. You know, his post-game comments were absolutely unprofessional. And, you know, they were sophomore and juvenile. But that leads me to asking you this question. What's your thoughts on the whole AD Facebook Live video, Tomlin's reaction, and do you think this whole escapade will impact the team on Sunday or impact how the team moves forward with AB in terms of a long-term contract, because there's rumors out there suggesting that they're going to make him the highest-paid receiver in the National Football League?
Well, first and foremost, let me say that I don't think there's a shadow of a doubt or a shot in hell that this is going to in any way impact the game on Sunday. I said it on our show on Monday with fans that called in talking about it. If anyone, like they talk about, what about the bulletin board material for the Patriots? Look, if the New England Patriots need Antonio Brown's Facebook Live video that you can overhear Mike Tomlin's comments to the team as bulletin board material, then their heads aren't in it anyway. This is the AFC Championship game. You shouldn't need any extra motivation, and that's kind of what Tomlin alluded to. Now, as for Tomlin's comments, I'm kind of going backwards. I apologize about that. Tomlin's comments, I thought for the second week in a row, and even going back to the Bradshaw comments, he is a master at handling these type of situations now at this point in his career. I thought he hit the nail right on the head with the different ways that he approached it and talking about how Antonio Brown's involvement, how it could impact the game, and apologizing for even his own demeanor. And people got to have to realize, like, he's in the locker room. There's going to be salty language in there, and he didn't even say anything that bad. Did you get to watch the video before I go any further?
Yeah, I watched the video, and I think people are lucky that he didn't say some other stuff.
Exactly.
That's
what I'm saying.
He could have said a lot worse stuff. Like, they're lucky he didn't talk about a lot of people, a lot of stuff, and drop a whole lot of other stuff. It was pretty calm. You know, that was a level a level one hurricane that they caught in there.
But the thing for me, and I wrote an article on the website, and I'm not sure if you checked it out or not, but the title of the article was, Antonio Brown's video was ill-timed, but not near the firestorm that people were making it out to be. It was inappropriate for him to be – I thought it was inappropriate that he was filming during the team prayer and when the coaches and captains were talking to the players after the game. Anything other than that, who the hell cares? Because let's be honest, if that didn't happen, he's done these videos so many times. He's been in the Steelers locker room doing a video. He's been on the airplane after the Cincinnati game doing the live video. He does this all the time. And so people are freaking out about it. Think, well, you realize he's done this before. He's done it in the locker room, and you never complained about it. But now, just because you can hear Mike Tomlin call New England a bunch of a-holes, which let's have a breaking news go at the bottom of the screen right now and say everyone thinks the Patriots are a-holes. It's not just Mike Tomlin. And I honestly think that Antonio Brown, it was just stupid. I buy his apology. I buy Mike Tomlin's comments about it. I don't think it's going to impact his contract negotiations unless he shows that he can't stop this stupid social media stuff when it's not appropriate. I noticed that I follow him on Snapchat. It's part of the job. You want to see what's going on with these guys. Very subdued after he took that video down on Monday morning. He hasn't been on Facebook as much. He hasn't been what that tells me is he's getting the message. He's getting the message. He's at least listening. There are some players that would be like, you know what, I'm going to do what I do. And that doesn't mean he's not on Snapchat. And I know today the media is all up in arms because reportedly on Snapchat, I didn't see this live, his media availability time was up. He was supposed to be at the podium, and he was getting his hair tightened up back in the locker room, and he showed up, I don't know, 20 minutes late. Get over yourselves. Who cares, okay? This guy's got work to do. He wants to get a haircut. He gets a haircut. I'm not going to fight him on that. I'm curious to hear what you think about the entire situation.
Well, in terms of Tomlin, Tomlin's a master at this because the media is pretty predictable when stuff like this happens. They kind of want you just to follow the sword and play Mr. Responsibility guy. So it's pretty easy. But, you know, they kind of want you to do that. And so knowing that, I think he's smart enough to know how the narrative plays out. And he plays to it expertly, and he's a wordsmith. So these situations aren't difficult for him. Pretty much anticipates how they're going to go and what they want him to say, whether he believes it or not. Now, in terms of Antonio Brown, we had this discussion last year when Antonio Brown came to training camp with the Rolls Royce with his name written on it. I told you at that point that he was a me guy. But anybody, first of all in Pittsburgh, and listeners, if any of you have never been to Pittsburgh or not familiar with the area, Pittsburgh is not the place to drive around with the Rolls Royce, period. I don't care whatever color it is. Definitely one that is not black with a gold stripe on it that has your name autographed on it. That screams me, 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 me. He's a me guy. And that's not a bad thing. It's okay. He's a me guy. It's the NFL. Talent trumps all. You're not a bad guy. You're just a me guy. It's okay. But he likes attention. He's a sixth-round draft pick that's not supposed to be here. He's played really hard, he's worked really hard, and he's ultra-productive. But he's a me guy. He probably will always be a me guy and always has been a me guy. This isn't new. So, you know, he may not record live with a Facebook video in the future, but he's going to do something dumb along these lines in the next year or two, and there'll be another press conference, and he'll be the highest paid wide receiver at that time, and it'll just be what it is. Knee guys stay knee guys. They just figure out how to do it in a way that doesn't have the biggest repercussions.
No, yeah, I think that Tomlin put it well when he said, we're going to punish him, but we're not going to punish us. So that means that what is that essentially saying is, we're going to punish him individually behind closed doors, but we're not going to punish the team because he's our best wide receiver. Now, let's say this was Eli Rogers. He's also on Snapchat a lot, does a lot of stuff like that. If this were him, then they very well could have said Eli Rogers will not be playing in the first half of the game because he's not Antonio Brown. And so I think that kind of puts everything in perspective. And if you think about it, kind of transitioning, if we want to talk about the Patriots, people forget Eli Rogers didn't play in that game. He was benched because he was reportedly late to meetings or something like that. So I think it also depends on who the player is. You know, if it's some scrub, I don't think that it's necessarily going to be handled the same way as the best wide receiver in the game. But what else you got for us tonight, Lance?
I want to switch to the Patriot game. Enough of the Chiefs. They're gone. And I want to send a special shout-out to my cousin, Robin Tubbs, a.k.a. also known as Robin Adams, big Chiefs fan. See ya! She was chirping a lot on Facebook last week about the game. She has been very silent. No Native American war chants. Just as an aside, I never root for the teams that disparage Native Americans. I always hope they lose. Something seems so wrong to me watching TV, looking at 80,000 people do a alleged, supposed Native American war chant. But I don't want to get on that. So I always hope those teams lose. But switching to the Patriots game, Jeff, you mentioned Eli Rogers. It's been reported that Ladarius Green is practicing this week. You sent me a text with FWIW, and listeners, I'm of the age where I have to look up what some of this stuff means, and I realized that meant for what it's worth, I did not know. You know, it took me a while to know what ROTFL meant. I had to ask my daughter. What does that mean? Like, it took me a while for LOL. I was like, hey, I'm used to typing stuff out. Like, what does that mean? Oh, what? So, yeah, thank you, Jeff. I did not know what FWIW was, but I did look it up on Google. And so I figured out what it is. And speaking of that, and speaking of him and Eli Rogers, we all know right now that the drink is being stirred by Le'Veon Bell. You can ring my bell. Ring my bell. It's Le'Veon. It's the juice man and that offensive line. That's what has this whole thing rolling. We all know that the narrative around the Patriots and Belichick is, which is interesting because this is with every team. Every team is trying to take away your best option. It's not anything unique to Belichick and the Patriots. By the way, I hate when they go into those diatribes in the media. But with that being said, the Patriots are going to try to take away Le'Veon Bell. How can they do that? Do you think they'll be successful at it? And if so, who's going to be this ancillary guy that steps up that's not AB to help the Steelers win this ballgame?
You know, it's funny you say that. I did a radio spot today, and they asked me almost the same exact question. I said, I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to give you two names. I said Eli Rogers and Jesse James. Now, this is all assuming that Ladarius Green does not play in this game. Now, Ladarius Green was a limited participant in practice on Wednesday, and that's really important. We talked about it before. If he can promote himself to full participant tomorrow, and if he can remain in participation on Friday, that's the last step for him. He gets cleared by an independent doctor, then he's good to go. He can play. Now, Ma'Darius Green can play. He is a difference maker, folks, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But if not, what I'm suggesting is it's going to be Elon Rodgers, and it's going to be Jesse James. I think you saw Jesse James against the Chiefs. The Chiefs were so enamored with Le'Veon Bell's running, Antonio Brown, and even at times Rodgers and Hamilton and whoever else was out there, that they literally forgot about Jesse James. I mean, he just wasn't even picked up. Now, I'm not sure saying that that's going to happen against the New England Patriots. I feel like they're a smarter defense. But Rodgers and James both can exploit the middle of the field. This is where Darius Hayward Bay comes in as a decoy, so to speak. If you put him opposite of Antonio Brown, he does have the speed, and he scored a touchdown against the Patriots in Week 7, mind you, don't forget. He has the speed to get the top of the defense off, and I think that that's when the open middle of the field is wide open. What's frustrating about Roethlisberger, especially against the Chiefs, is it took him forever to want to go to the middle of the field. It's been wide open. It's going to be wide open, and Eli Rogers is so good at creating space over the middle of the field. And Jesse James is more athletic than people give him credit for. I think he's more athletic than Heath Miller ever was. I think Heath Miller was a better blocker. Heath Miller might have had better hands, but Jesse James has a better catching radius. He's a really good tight end, and he's going to be really good once he kind of gets the blocking down. Those would be the two players that I would say. It's going to be Jesse James, especially in the red zone, and Eli Rogers. Someone else is going to have to step up and win their one-on-one matchup because, as you know, Belichick loves to take his top cornerback, put him on the number two threat, and then double-team the number one receiver. That's kind of his way of working through teams that don't have that true number two. If the Steelers had Martavis Bryant, they necessarily couldn't do that because if you put your number two on someone like Bryant, well, he's going to win that matchup over and over. So it's going to be difficult, but I'd say Rodgers and Jesse James, what do you think about that?
Speaking as an aside real quick, you did read, I'm sure, that Martavis Bryant applied for reinstatement. Any thoughts on that? You think there'll be any hang-ups with that? You think he'll be a Steeler next year?
Well, it's funny you said that because when the news broke yesterday that his agent stated that they were that they have not applied yet. Now, he might have applied today. I'm sure I didn't see that, but I wrote an article today about how the Steelers and the fan base cannot bank on Bryant being on the team next year. That doesn't mean I don't think that he's going to be on the team. It doesn't mean that I don't hope that he's on the team. The guy's scored 14 touchdowns in 21 games in his career. But we've just seen this story so many times where Bryant, Josh Gordon, Alden Smith, they make a mistake. They're trying to come back. They make another mistake. Now, he supposedly has cleaned up his act. He has moved out of L.A. He hasn't smoked pot in 8 months. He's supposedly gotten help. There's a lot of hoops he needs to jump through, and one of those, the last one being Roger Goodell has to meet with him personally and has to okay him for reinstatement. If he can get back to the team, it's going to be a prove-it situation. But the Steelers, with Marcus Wheaton being a free agent, I don't think that they can go into the next season thinking that Brian's definitely going to be there and he's going to be there for all 16 games. If he's there, great. If he's not, you can't bank on him being there. But I think that he'll be back. He seems to have shown enough to get reinstated. Whether he can stay reinstated, that's the biggest question. What do you think about that?
I think he'll be back, and I think they're going to draft a guy too. They're going to draft another guy. I think they're comfortable with Sammy Coates, what they've seen this year. His season was derailed because of the finger injuries, but I think they're going to draft another guy. They're not going to be stuck without him and how it impacts them, and they're going to light a fire under him too because it's the National Football League, and they're like, look, you know, dependability is for a lot is the number one ability. And so they're definitely going to draft a position because I think they realize if they had a legitimate number two receiving threat that, you know, their chances to win a seventh championship are that much better this year. But it's interesting that you talked about Jesse James and you mentioned Heath Miller. And I get a little sensitive when you talk about Heath Miller. Well, hopefully – you know, Jesse James will be as good as you envision. But from a coverage perspective, it's interesting. You know, I think they're really going to, you know, really see a lot of single high, and they're really going to try to set it up to have these other guys beat them. And the way Ben is playing, and we've talked about the way Ben has played in the playoffs, if they have to sling it, you know, is Ben playing well enough where they can come out and sling it? And how do you think they're going to approach this offensively? I would love for them to come out and be extremely aggressive and really go after the Patriots. Tempo, no huddle, be really aggressive and really challenged. How do you think they're going to approach it? Do you think they'll try to ball control it, get Le'Veon going, keep Brady off the field, or do you think they're going to come out and really try to be ultra-aggressive?
In my opinion, if I were Todd Haley, I'd have Ben Roethlisberger, the playmakers, and really the entire offense in the room, and I would pull up film of the New England Patriots, and I'd say, gentlemen, this is our offense this week. I think that they have the offense, and the longer I think about it, you look at the New England Patriots personnel, especially without Rob Gronkowski. Tell me where they have an advantage, other than possibly quarterback, from an offensive standpoint compared to Pittsburgh. I mean, I'm asking that question. Can you think, other than, we'll all admit Tom Brady's an upgrade over Roethlisberger, but all the other positions, who would you say is an upgrade at any position of the Patriots over the Steelers on offense?
And it's funny you ask that because, you know, I, as you guys know, if you listen to the show, I break down the defensive side of football. And when you look at the Patriots, they're a very disciplined, very well-schemed offense, meaning they use scheme to create advantages for individual ball players. Because if you look at this as a collective, and it's hard for me to say this, because they're a 15-2 team, they are not very talented individually on the offensive side of the football. There is no particular player that keeps you up at night other than Brady and how he orchestrates that offense. That's what makes you scared, is the fact that it's tough to get pressure on him, and he's orchestrating that offense like a maestro. But it's a collection of all the pieces, not any one particular piece. A.B. is better than any wide receiver they have. Le'Veon is better than any running back they have. The Steelers' offensive line is better. But when you look at their team, you look at Edelman, the matchup between Edelman and Tennant or against any of the linebackers is a tough matchup. You look at White, you look at Lewis against the linebackers. If you can isolate them, that's a tough matchup. So what they do is they find how they can get their pieces on your guys and create mismatches. And they do have a couple of mismatches. White and Lewis on the backers will be tough. Bennett, Edelman, White, Lewis, any of those guys against Timmons will be tough. But any one of those guys individually, you're not scared of. You're just scared of the collection and how it's coordinated scheme and how Brady runs it.
Well, let me get back to my point, and you're kind of making my point, is that this Steelers offense is capable of running a very similar style as the New England Patriots. Due to the Patriots, what they do to everyone else, and what is that? They have those time-consuming drives. They take their shots when they're there. And if you watch that Houston game on Saturday, they took shots downfield, and they were successful on several of those. But the Steelers have the quickness, they have the versatility, they have the playmakers to be able to run that style of offense. So you're asking me, what would I do? I would go out and I would have an up-tempo offense. I'm not saying you go no huddle necessarily. Go to that muddle huddle that the Steelers like to run, because it's not going to let the Patriots substitute. You find them in a package that you like to maybe run on, and you run it down their throat because the Steelers' offensive line is good enough, even if they're three or four wide, to still create offensive running lanes for Le'Veon Bell, especially with someone that's with his skill set. If they're in a heavy package and they're thin in the secondary, throw on them because you have the playmakers, whether it's Rodgers, James, Hamilton, AB, obviously, everyone knows that. That's the approach I would take to this game. I think they need to be creative. They need to do something different. They need to think outside the box, but not so far out of the box that they get away from what's gotten them to the AFC Championship game. That's what I would do. I would really mimic the Patriots' offense and really play, help your defense. They did this to a T against the Miami Dolphins and against the Chiefs. They controlled the time of possession. They were able to consistently move the ball, get first downs, time-consuming drives. For crying out loud, Jordan Berry punted the ball one time in the divisional round. You're doing your job. I know they didn't score touchdowns, but you're doing your job when that happens. That's my approach. I'm curious what you think the defense can do to help control Tom Brady in that offense that we just alluded to.
One thing about Brady, and you're talking about the difference about their offense and looking at the Steeler pieces and the Steelers being able to implement offensively some of the things that the Patriots do against the Patriots. The big difference is Brady, and we all know that that's the difference. But the thing is, when you watch Brady, and you particularly watch Brady on film, Brady doesn't get fooled, and Brady is never in a hurry. He's very patient. He is patient enough to wait it out. You make a mistake, he's got you. When you make the mistake is when he gets you. He's patient enough to do it. And he can be patient because his offensive line and them getting the ball out so quick affords him a lot of time. And so what we saw in the game against Houston was, Houston was very effective in disguising and blitzing and getting home through A-gap pressures. I think you'll see the Steelers do some of that stuff as well, because I think the Steelers are going to have to blitz Brady, but they're going to have to do it smartly. They're going to have to hold their water, and they're not going to have to get – they can't be cadenced into revealing – the looks. They're going to have to really sugar the looks, disguise the looks. They're not going to be able to fool Brady, but they can't give Brady a clean picture. Bud Dupree and James Harrison are going to have to be cooking as well. And Shazier, I think, is essential in those A-gap blitzes with his ability to get home. Now, there are some big mismatches that play to the advantage of the Patriots. But I don't know if any one of them will actually kill you. I think they have an absolute advantage with Edelman. They like to put Edelman in trips, line him up closest to the tackle on either side of the formation, and get him ISO'd on Lawrence Timmons. That's what they use to move the chains. The Steelers are going to have to also be good in the run game because the Garrett Blunt had a field day against them in the running game. I think the Steelers will use a little bit of dime in this game. It's a situation to take Timmons off the field and bring in maybe Robert Golden. And they play big, you know, with three safeties and three corners in some situations. But this is another game where they're going to have to really tackle the catch and be really disciplined in this game. They can't let five-yard passes or crosses and digs to Edelman and these other guys. There are five-yard throws turning into 14-yard plays. They really have to limit that. And they're going to have to play excellent red zone defense. They can't have coverage busts like they had in the Kansas City game, you know, for the two-point conversion, you know, which luckily James Harrison drew a penalty on Fisher. They're going to have to be really disciplined in the red zone. They're going to have to tackle, and I think they're going to have to blitz Brady in spots, but be really smart about it and try to hide it as much as possible and really hold their water and not tip their hand.
Yeah, it's it's going to be a tough test. I'm curious to see whether they can get home with just four. That's what the Houston Texans did so well with Clowney and Merciless, and they moved those guys around. And the more you watch the Steelers' defensive front, they're kind of mimicking some of those same things. You see James Harrison when they have a lot of times that third safety, which was Jordan Dangerfield against Miami, on the field. They'll move James Harrison almost to an inside linebacker position. They'll move Stephon Tuitt around. It's going to be – I'm really curious to see what the Steelers' defense does to try to slow down Tom Brady, to minimize the scoring. But, you know, I think we both agree, you cannot give them easy points. You look back to the Houston game, believe it or not, that game was a lot closer than the score indicates, and they gave up a kick return touchdown. Special teams is going to be big here. You look back at those past games against the Patriots, they typically had a splash play. You can't let it happen. You can't let, you have to make them earn it. And that's the tough part about the New England Patriots. They're very, very good, very, very disciplined.
Let me ask this. Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Let me ask this before I get into the prediction. I want you to predict the game first, Joy. I think the Tua Andrews matchup is big. The Steelers don't have anyone as good, I think, consistently snap for snap as Merciless or Clowney. And I think if Tua can get off the bus hot and really dominate that matchup against Andrews, you know, getting A-gap pressure, even if you don't have to blitz, it's even better. If you don't have to blitz to get the pressure and you can get it from Tua really whooping Andrews in pass protection, then that'll go a long way for the Steelers winning this game. But, Joey, lead us off and give us your prediction.
Yeah, you were asking for it earlier, and I said, you know, you're going to have to wait to find out. It's going to come to a shock to a lot of people that listen to the show on a regular basis. But in this game, I'm going to have to go with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I like the Steelers, but not because – I say that not because I'm a homer. I am a homer. I'll admit that. I'm proud of it. I say that because I think the Steelers, for once, actually match up with New England. And I remember those games, whether it's regular season or postseason in the past, where just the Patriots just seemed so much faster than the Steelers. And they were so good in and out of their breaks. It just seemed like they were always playing from a trailing position. I don't think that anymore. And Sean Davis and Artie Burns and Ryan Chazier's healthy, and you get these guys on the field, Bud Dupree's playing like a maniac. They're fast. They're athletic. I think they match up well. I think the Steelers' offense, especially Ben Roethlisberger, is due for a big game. I keep saying it, and I keep waiting for it. I'm going to keep saying it until I get it. But I'm going to say Steelers win this game 34-30. It's going to be higher scoring than people think, and it's going to be a late Steelers touchdown. Think back to the Ravens game, a field goal would tie it. They end up getting the touchdown. They win. They punch their ticket. Do you want to know my NFC prediction too, or do you want to wait and do those afterwards?
No, you can go ahead and give it to me. You're feeling frisky tonight, so go ahead and give me that prediction.
I am. Okay, so my NFC prediction, I think Aaron Rodgers' luck runs out. I think that the Atlanta Falcons offense is too much for that Green Bay defense. And I think that in Super Bowl 51, we have the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Atlanta Falcons in Houston for all the marbles. That's my prediction. What are yours?
Woo-wee! Well, let me give you the Steelers prediction. No Rob Gronkowski makes this, to me, a very winnable game for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Unfortunately, you know, I'm the pain side of this relationship. I am picking the New England Patriots to beat the Steelers 31-27. I think it's a highly competitive game. I think Foreman, the way he's been playing, that the one field goal that they kick in the red zone or the field goal that they kick in the red zone will come back to haunt them. And you know, I just think they're going to kick a couple of field goals. They'll score some touchdowns and kick a couple of field goals, and Brady will probably score the majority of his. and kick maybe one field goal, but I think it's going to be a highly competitive game because without Rob Gronkowski, excuse me, there's no one on that offense that really scares you. It's really well schemed. That Houston game, I agree, was a lot closer than people think that it was. You know, you give up a return touchdown, you know, some turnovers by Osweiler, a drop by Fuller. You know, I think that offense doesn't have the playmakers that you normally have. And that offense is really different without Gronkowski. But I still think in Foxborough with Brady, I think it's going to be a tough game. If Ladarius Green plays, if I knew Ladarius Green were playing, I would pick the Steelers to win. I think Ladarius Green changes the coverages enough with his ability to run the scene that I don't think New England will be able to defend the Steelers the same way. But I like New England to win 31-27. And I agree with you. I think Atlanta beats Green Bay. That offense right now is cooking on a supernatural level, and I think it's going to be difficult for any team remaining in the playoffs to stop that offense. Atlanta at home on that carpet, I think it sets up the matchup, unfortunately, of the Patriots versus Matt Ryan, who I think will be the MVP in the National Football League in the Super Bowl.
I'm telling you right now, man, the Patriots offense is not that good. Even when they connected on big plays against the Houston Texans, it was ugly. Brady doesn't look the same without Gronkowski, and all their wins this year were against chumps. The only time they lost was against a legitimate team in the Seattle Seahawks. I'm telling you right now, this team is not the same Patriots team everyone thinks they are. They have a lot of wins against some really crappy competition, against some really crappy quarterbacks. If Brock Osweiler was worth even a dime of his contract that he has, they would have been in that game until the very last second, but he sucks. He's awful. I'm telling you right now, folks, go to the window, take the Steelers, getting 5, 5.5, 6, doesn't matter. Take them. Punch the ticket. I'll see you next week because that's what we're going to be talking about, the Steelers in the Super Bowl, and I'm going to make Lance eat crow on there.
Hey, I want to eat a big healthy, too, and I like my crow barbecue. So I like it black, and I like black and crow. So hopefully I got a big dish of crow. Hey, I love it. Feed it to me.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that, man, but you know what? Do you have anything else for us, or you want to talk to Steeler Nation or anything, Lance? We normally do that before we call it a show.
I think we're going to call it a show, Jeff. I was going to ask you. I was going to just give you a bunch of Brady stats, and you know why should the Steelers even show up? But I think you handled that. Like you are firmly convinced, absolutely, that the Steelers are going to win. So that's glad enough for me.
Yeah, they are going to win. It's time for them to get the monkey off their back. Big Ben steps up. I'm telling you what, it's going to be a legendary game. I could even see this thing being a blowout. The Steelers just blowing their doors off those chumps, and I would love nothing more than to be able to sit back on my couch on Sunday and watch them embarrass the Patriots at home on their turf. That would be phenomenal. I'm not going to predict that's going to happen. You all know my prediction, but that's what I think. But I'll tell you what, if you're a Steelers fan, you're listening to the show, and you haven't been to BehindTheSteelCurtain.com before, make sure you do so. We've got a lot of coverage for you coming out for this AFC Championship game, and we will be back next week no matter what. We could be talking about the week off between the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, or we could be talking about the end of the season wrap-up show. Let's hope it's not the latter. But for Lance, as always, I appreciate your time. We'll see you all next week. Bye.